Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, folks, to Hamp's Corner of America, a corner where your host, Codis Hampton II, hangs out with notable guests, discussing topics of interest to you and yours. Milwaukee's 13th and Juno is where our host grew up, where his creativity and his imagination originated. Hamp's Corner of America is where we discuss, debate, and innovate. In the end, we will all leave with a sense of purpose. So come on, hang out with us. And now your host, Codis Hampton II.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Hamp. Here at the corner, we're pleased that you're taking the time to check us out. We are old school here, without disregarding the contributions of hip-hop to our current state of being. You will find that we often refer back to our past, as we do believe that if you do not know where you came from, you most certainly will not get to where you want to go. It is our hope that you will hang with us and our guest of the hour, and even contribute to the discussion, so that we may leave here having gained, or at the very least, enhanced our perspective on the topics of today. And by all means, have fun while doing so. Without further ado, let's get deep into it.
Deep into it. Hello, folks. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you're taking the time to stop on by and hang with me on my corner. As the advertisement says on social media, we have recording artist Cliff Payne with us today. But before we get to our guest of the hour, let's play a favorite song of mine. You know I like to play that music. This is by Doc Powell along with Jeffrey Osborne on vocals. It's called For Old Time's Sake. I'm going to see, can I get a guest with the phone here? Try him again.
Hello.
Hey, Cliff.
Yeah, hey, how are you doing?
All right, this is Curtis Hampton. I know a lot of times that I tell the guest in the email the number I'm dialing from, and they look at that number and say, wait a minute, this is out of, I don't know who this is. I bet you that's just what you did you?
Yeah.
All right, let me let you gather yourself. Just hold on a minute while I introduce you, okay?
All right.
All right,
okay.
So ladies and gentlemen, we are pleased to have Cliff Payne with us today. He, as the Los Angeles Times described his singing voice, is a lush tenor with soaring melismas in his individual passage, with no limits to his genres of music. He has covered jazz, R&B, gospel, blues, and rock and pop. He has opened for legends in the field of music, such as Dionne Warwick, Johnny Mathis, and the Bay Area icon Tony Bennett. Sharing the stage with such notable artists like Diane Reeves, Bobby McFerrin, and Lionel Richie, and others, virtually speaks to what others in the music think of him. He comes to us as a Harlem-born individual, Indiana-raised, and now calls the Bay Area home. As originally stated, we are pleased to have such a gifted artist with us today in Cliff Payne. All right, Brother Cliff, how are you today?
I'm doing great today, Curtis. Thanks for having me on. I'm very, very excited and happy to be on your show.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. Well, without further ado, let me get into some of these questions that I'm so anxious to ask you and hear your response. Let me ask right off the bat, tell us about your mother and father and how they related to the Harlem Renaissance.
You know, it's a really interesting thing, and it's something that I've got a particular pride about. You know, my dad was New Jersey born. His name was James Payne. They called him Buddy, and he's born in New Jersey, but he spent most of his life in New York, in Harlem, and he was there. He was there in the latter part of the 1920s, all during the 30s, 40s, and 50s. So he got a chance to play with Lionel Hampton, Cozy Cole, and people of that ilk. So he was a part of the New York scene. My mom, Aline Payne, was born in Evansville, Indiana, and when she graduated from high school, she went down to Tuskegee, Alabama, at the college there. And then she moved to New York, where she met my dad. And my dad eventually wound up playing in the Apollo Theater band on a weekly basis. And my mom was there with him. My mom got a chance to sing behind Nat King Cole, and it was a great time. And so that's the connection to the Harlem Renaissance. My dad was a part of that.
All right, so it seemed like you, as you're describing, you come from a family of entertainment, or entertainers.
You know, entertainment is the word. That we had lots of singers, lots of preachers. Everybody sang. You know, it's like one of those things, everybody sang. So when we had our family get-togethers, reunions, even funerals, it was a treat.
Okay. Where did you begin singing as a child?
It's hard to, you know, I can't remember ever not singing. I can go back to when we first, when we left Harlem for Evansville, Indiana. I can remember standing in front of my grandfather's radio. I think the first song I remember hearing on the radio was the Platters, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. And I think that was when I really, really started to sing, when I heard Smoke Gets in Your Eyes.
Okay.
And so that had to be probably around age five. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Now, you had also mentioned your inspiration to sing also come from hearing the late, great Donny Hathaway back in the 70s. What did you think when you heard his singing voice?
Oh, wow. He sounded so, not only did his voice sound different to me, the band that he had sounded totally different. The first song I heard was a song called Jealous Guy. It's a John Lennon song that Donnie covered on his Donny Hathaway Live album. A girlfriend of mine had played the song for me. And I just went, whoa, who is that?
That was
when I really said, you know what, I want to sing. I really want to sing when I heard that voice.
That will make you pick the profession right there.
Oh, yeah, what a voice he had. My goodness.
Yeah. I understand you credit Bobby McFerrin as discovering you. How did you meet Bobby?
Yeah, that's another great story. I just moved to California. This was 1980. And at the time, you know, I was playing a lot of guitar and singing too. And so nobody knew me out here. So I would take my guitar and some music with me wherever I go. So one evening, I was just walking down the street in Albany, a city right next to Berkeley, California. Mm-hmm. And I passed this club and I see this singer. He's really singing. I mean, he's singing like he meant it, you know.
Mm.
I didn't know it was Bobby McFerrin. In fact, I had not heard of Bobby McFerrin. I was new. So I walked in the club when he took a break, and I walked up to him, and I said, hey, my name is Cliff Lane. I just moved out here. Do you mind if I sit in with you? And he just kind of looked at me, and he said, are you good? And I said, yeah. And then he said, but are you real good? And I said, yeah, I think so. He goes, okay, I'll call you up on the next set. And he called me up, and I can't remember what we sang, but I sang, and then he joined me, and that was the beginning of everything. He got me my first gig in California. He featured me on a couple of his gigs. And that was the beginning. That was the beginning of a lot of stuff out here for me.
Wow, what a story. I mean, you know, it's just like fate that you two met.
Yeah, it was just before Don't Worry, Be Happy. In fact, it was long before that. And I didn't know that he was on the way up. I didn't know. All I knew is that he sounded incredible.
I tell you what caught my, beside everything that you had written in your resume there, another thing that caught my attention was that what type of projects have you worked on with the Whispers and others?
Yeah, I've done so. I've done so many projects. Most of the projects that I've done are what I call like behind the scenes projects. I know that one group several years ago that I think is All for One. They had that hit, I Swear. I did demos for them. I did demos for. The Whispers, particularly a project that the late, great Nicholas Caldwell was interested in doing on me. Nicholas just passed away, you know, about a couple of weeks or so ago. And they were very gracious to me. I recorded a song, what was it? It was a ballad that I wrote with the late, great Grady Wilkins, who was a music director for the Whispers for so long. And they were very gracious. That's one of the projects that I did with some of the folks out here. That's way back in the day. That's like mid '80s, early '80s, I think.
Well, I understand. Go ahead.
Oh well, yeah. I was saying working with Nicholas and Grady and the twins was really great. It really bolstered my confidence. And although their careers really took off, and Nicholas wasn't able to continue with getting me towards my project. I stayed in touch with them for a long time. It was real inspiration working with them.
Yeah. I tell you. Do you play any instruments?
Yes, I do. I play guitar, and you were asking me when I started singing, and I've been doing it for so long. I do remember when I started playing guitar, and that was in 1962. I was in the eighth grade. I learned from my mom. I play mainly these days acoustic guitar. When I first moved out to California, I became known as the singing guitarist, and then I stopped. I stopped for a while, and now I'm working on putting it back in my act. It's been a long time since I've really, really played.
I understand.
But when I did play...
No, go ahead.
I'll say when I did play, when I did play, I got a chance to back some good folks. I backed Rich Little when he came to the comedian Rich Little and some others. It was a tough gig. The music was difficult when I got through it. I'm working on my guitar playing these days too.
All right. So, I mean, obviously, the more you do, the more competitive you become, so to speak.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It makes you more valuable, and quite, you know, honestly, you get more work, and it's always good. It's always good when you can do something that supports. My main love musically is singing, and guitar is something that is a good support.
Okay. Well, and obviously you have a professional singer's voice. That much is verified.
Thank you.
When the commercial world comes calling. So what are some of the commercials where we have heard your voice?
You know, the first commercial I did was in Evansville, Indiana, and it was a regional commercial for the Chevrolet dealership there called I Mean It When I Say. And, you know, someone was asking me about it. I did that back in the mid-70s. That was one. And then once I moved to California, even before I moved to California, I was in Reno for a while. I did commercials for several casinos there, Calneva and others. When I moved to California, I did commercials for Molson Beer, international commercials, Manwich, Delta Dental, a slew of others, which I was very fortunate. Those commercials can be very, very good for you financially.
Lucrative, as you say.
Very lucrative, yes.
Or something. Yeah.
Tell you, it keeps the bills paid and then some.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we're going to play one of the cuts from your brand new release solo album, and entitled Welcome to My World. This first one is called Peace is More Than the Absence of War. So I want to let you tell us about the song before I actually play it. You want to set that up for us, Cliff?
Yes, thank you. The idea behind Peace is More Than the Absence of War came as my producer Preston Glass and Larry Batiste and I were just going over ideas in which we could make some kind of a social statement, without being too preachy or anything. And we were just talking, and all of a sudden Preston just went, peace is more than the absence of war. And he said he had had that going on in his head for the longest time. So that's how that song came about, and we constructed the song lyrically around certain scenarios, going to different neighborhoods and just kind of using as a background some of the stuff that's been going on in the news. It's sort of like our modern day take a la What's Going On, the Marvin Gaye classic. We kind of patterned the whole thing after that idea.
Okay, all right. Well, without further ado, then I'm just going to play the song, Peace is More Than the Absence of War by Cliff Payne, his debut solo album called Welcome to My World. Here's the song.
All right.
All right. Hold on.
What is freedom if you can't achieve the things you're destined for? And what is peace if you only believe that peace is just the absence of war? People pointing fingers straight at us, and you know they might be right. These words I say might sound dangerous. You know we have to change this plight. Peace is more than the absence of war. Love is still worth fighting for. Peace is more than the absence of war. Let us come together and love one another. Na 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 na. Na 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 na. Young lady walking down the street, going nowhere fast. Young man, no opportunities, just can't seem to get rid of his past. Well, grown folks can't get no respect despite their years of wisdom. What's up with Generation X? They need to go back. Clap your hands like this. Come on, clap your hands, people. Yeah.
One to start off with. Sounds
right.
Pretty good.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, a couple of shout outs. That's Midnight Stars, Reggie Calloway on flute.
Okay.
And the lady that you hear singing on there is none other than Maxine Jones from En Vogue.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you, I tell you. You're more than a name dropper, Cliff. I tell you, you're giving us some names that we're all familiar with. Okay.
All right.
Well,
hold on a minute.
I've got to do some business here. So.
Okay.
We will return to our guest in a moment. This is going to take me a couple of minutes, so just bear with me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This program is brought to you by Hamp's Corner of America Parent Company, the Chia Group. You can check us out at httphcofa.net, where you will also find how to order my latest book entitled Remembering Mars, Gracie and John Hampton's Firstborn. How many times have you been told that a black father is not a member of the household? This book is about a black man, his roots, his upbringing, and subsequently his performance as head of his household. It's about the love and respect he exhibited as well as receiving the same from everybody that met him. The book is much more than just a father-children relationship. It's a roadmap to parenting for all people. Remembering Moz is available worldwide in paperback, hardcover, and ebook formats at OutskirtsPress.com, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It was published on October 23rd. It is also noted on the United Kingdom's iAuthor book site at www.iauthor.uk.com. For you Apple users, the book is available in an iPad, iPhone format at your Apple Internet distributors. More about that and other availabilities where you can also find my blogs on a regular basis at katarrhythm.wordpress.com. That's one word, Katar Rhythm, katarrhythm.wordpress.com. The show is also brought to you by Rich Tycoon, all original AO brand. You may have seen him wearing it on his latest CD, Chapter 34. He has on a pullover hooded sweatshirt with the pronounced letters AO capitalized in bold. The hooded sweatshirts come in a variety of colors. He also has a zippered style with a hoodie and the same all-original lettering across his chest, displaying the big AO for you. You can go to his site at blackbizness.net, that's BlackBizness.net. Go there for the full details. I got mine, order yours today. And we're back with Mr. Cliff Payne. Well, Cliff,
all right.
One of the shows you mentioned an appearance was the talent show Star Search in 1990. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, it was quite an experience. Actually, I had tried to get on the show 5 years earlier, in 1985, and I never heard from anyone. So the opportunity, and I first tried as a soloist. So this opportunity in 1990 came along when I was singing lead for a band called Reflex. And it literally came out of nowhere. And I think our bass player had submitted one of our songs in, and we got the call. And I was in the process of moving to Hollywood anyway, moving down to L.A. And so we did the show just a few blocks from where I was living, actually, in L.A. And I like to say this, I thought I knew what fear was until I did that show. I had not been afraid, nerves, never bothered me before. But when I heard that theme song before the curtain went up, it's like my life flashed before me. We were on the show. We were on the show three times. And we did original material, and so it meant that we got a chance to get some, some residual money off of the show and everything for doing that. It was a really high pressure experience to be around so many people who were there just trying to win and basically trying to make it there in Hollywood. It was a pressure cooker situation that I'd never seen before.
I can imagine, when you've only got so many times or so many minutes to impress, and you got to make sure you remember your line.
It was something. It was really it stays in my memory. It was my welcome to L.A. gig.
I used to halfway sing, but I got married, so that sort of ended my singing career.
Everybody sings, everybody's got a voice to sing, and it's just a matter of doing it.
The reason I say that is because I had some people that, that I knew that I could sing, and they would come up and, we'll be at the club at such and such, so stop on by. And sure as heck, I'd go home and get with the wife and not show up. You know?
There you go.
I mean, you know, when you, you know, when you mention something like Star Search, that sort of puts you in the mind of, okay, here we go. We've got, this is a show where we're just not hanging out and doing a cut with somebody. This is a show where we're trying
right.
to impress, and that's what put the more pressure on you,
yeah.
I would imagine.
That's right. Yes, it's the pressure. Pressure to be impressive in a really creative and original, unique way. Yeah, it's tons of pressure. Tons of pressure.
Yeah. Was that before or after working with the American Idol judge, Peggy Blue? Could you tell us about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, Peggy. That was actually just before. I met Peggy probably just a few weeks after that. We were working. Peggy and I were working for you know, Peggy Blue has got a resume. She's worked with everyone, Quincy Jones and everyone. She's the Supreme. She's done a bunch of different stuff. And we started doing a bunch of private gigs together. We were doing a ton of duets, and I was really blown away when she got the American Idol gig. You know, because she. You know, she's such a sweet, sweet person, or a great singer.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, on that show, she had to be like the vocal coach from hell.
Yeah, I was thinking, boy,
that's the exact opposite of Peggy. Peggy is a sweetheart.
Okay. Yeah.
She's totally different. She's just playing a role, you know, on that show.
Yeah.
I just heard from her just a few months ago. She's still in L.A. doing great.
Okay.
One of my favorite singers.
Okay. Well, you performed with Harvey Mason of 4Play and Narada Michael
uh-huh.
Walden and
yeah.
the jazz fusion group Hiroshima, which I found that a little odd. I'm going to Hiroshima or Hiroshima.
Yeah.
But Hiroshima. We understand that you are...
Yeah.
You are in the field. You go wherever you are called. But describe some of those experiences for us, since you.
Starting with the Harvey Mason thing. That was a commercial. That was a commercial that I did in L.A. And it's been, you know, that was probably the early 90s. I can't remember how I got the gig, but I remember I got there and. You know, no one told me it was Harvey Mason until I heard somebody say his name, and I knew so many people knew Harvey Mason as a drummer. I didn't know he was such a great producer. He was very, very patient with me, very complimentary of the work that I did for him. I think the commercial, it was something for that was the Calvin Eva commercial, I believe. But he chose me out of a whole bunch of folks that were interested in doing the lead on the song. He chose me. And I was very, 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 very happy.
Well,
very, very happy. Norda Michael.
Well,
thank you. Norda Michael Walden here in the San Francisco Bay Area, he's an icon. I mean, he's won like about 5, 6, or 7 Grammys and
right.
produce Whitney and Aretha and so many others. He's a wonderful, I mean, in addition to being a phenomenal drummer himself, like Harvey Mason, he's a wonderful producer to work with.
Well,
Hiroshima.
Oh no, go ahead. Let's not forget
Hiroshima. Yeah, Hiroshima was, I did sing lead. I did not sing lead on that. I got asked to come to the studio and be part of a group song. I think the name of the song was One of Us off of their Providence album. And it was a quick in and out kind of a thing. And it was nice to sing with them. Very nice to sing.
Well, like I said, it shows that you have that, you know, you have the talent, because people were calling you on a regular basis. So, you know, and like I said, you just wasn't working with Tom, Dick, and Harry. You was working with.
Yeah, it's always great when that happens. It's a compliment. You know, it's, I always say it's a compliment when people say, you know, you're a great singer, but a lot of times it's even a greater compliment just to know that you're out there working.
Exactly.
and working with great folks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me ask the question here. Let me just ask the question. You've seen the music industry change with the influx of computer-generated music, say in the pop and rap
yes.
world. What is your view on that transition?
You're exactly right. I mean, the music industry has changed incredibly. Even over the last 10 years, it's
mm-hmm.
changed incredibly. What I like to say, you know, every generation has its music. You've got some music that maybe is not so good and some music that is good. That's
mm-hmm.
great. And so in that sense, this generation is no different from any other generation. I know so many times you hear someone from a previous generation knock the music of the new generation and say there's no good music. I'm not going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of great artists out there.
Mm-hmm.
With any generation, though, there's only a handful of artists that really last for a long time. I really wish, regarding singers, you know, I'm not a big fan of lip singing, and not a fan of the tricks that they can do in the studio, auto tune and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there was a greater emphasis vocally
mm-hmm.
in this generation on live performance vocals, not so much live performance dancing or whatever, you know, the big stage show. I wish there was a greater emphasis on just being able to stand up with a mic and sing. That I think is the big challenge today. There's some great singers out there, you know.
Exactly. We know that there's talent out there.
That sort of leads
me into the next question. My wife and I watched the Grammys Monday night, and it was sad to hear so much of what was offered from the rising stars sound so much alike.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think of what seems like a lost art of originality in today's music?
Yeah, this is a topic or subject that, you know, you talk about for hours, days, even, you know.
Exactly.
It's
a whole show on that.
As I just said, the old saying, the cream will always rise to the top, and there's some great stage performers out there, some wonderful
mm-hmm.
stage performers, and
mm-hmm.
it's. You know, I don't know if it's because of the increase and depth of the digital age that's
mm-hmm.
causing a lot of cookie-cutter type, you know, things coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But in spite of all of this, and as I say, every generation has had the same thing. I mean, even, you know, going back to the dawn of the modern recording age, there's always been
mm-hmm.
this type of discussion going on. It seems like the current day and age is just more prevalent, you know.
Right.
And I don't know if it's that way because, you know, I'm not in my 20s anymore, and
mm-hmm.
You know, the several stars out there I think are fantastic. I think Adele is wonderful. John Legend.
Mm-hmm.
is fantastic. Michael Bublé is incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Beyonce is very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others that are out there that are just fantastic. And within any generation, there are always
mm-hmm.
great talent that never really gets to that top level of recognition. I was busy gigging. I didn't gig as the Grammys this year, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But but I'm hearing about it and reading about it. And
I think I'm not going to so much ask you your opinion, but you know, it's just like you know, it's hard for you to tell the differences between the different genres as we once did back in the day. I mean, country music sounds like pop, and pop sounds like sometimes R&B, and I do agree with you when you say, even back in the heyday of the 70s, when all these different groups and acts got together and was making such great music, there were people out there that was looking for, you know, ways to, you know, less talented people who were looking for ways to crack the lineup themselves. So, I mean, it's always going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not, that's not what I'm complaining about. But I think, you know, I'm beginning to, and me from somebody who's looking from the outside rather than you who is inside, it just seems like a lot of this is directed by the record companies themselves. And I mean, they're all profit, you know, and so.
I think more than ever before, I mean, with the whole financial situation here in this country, more times the record companies, well, you said it, the bottom line more than ever is profit.
Yeah.
That's you know, the traditional record companies, recording companies, are mainly just interested in profit. And this is where the good part of the digital age comes in, because it's the digital age has allowed artists to have more control of what we do. We can build our own fan base.
Agreed.
We can. And that's the great thing about it, and we can be more focused on our art and less concerned. I mean, we're concerned about, we want to make money, but that's not the main reason we do what we do, and the digital age allows us to have more freedom.
Yeah. Well, let me see. There's a caller here. I just noticed that. Hold on. Let me see. Can I bring him on?
Okay.
Hello, caller. It's 651.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing? I just noticed you. Sorry, we were deep in the discussion. Did you have something you wanted to add to the discussion?
Well, I was going right along with you.
So, and your name, sir?
My name is Gregory Van Leer.
Oh, okay.
I want to say which Gregory Van Leer. is this Gregory Van Leer Senior?
Senior, right? You know, the one from the basement back in Evansville.
Oh my! It's been a few years. It's been a few decades. Great to hear from you. Oh man.
You know, I've been tracking you, man. So I was when I seen that this was going to be on, and I just wanted to catch it and make sure that I added my congratulations to the album, and I definitely will be getting a copy of it. And you know, we've been following you all along, and just wanted to say congratulations from myself and from Barbara.
Well, thank you. Definitely say hi to Barbara and your family for me. You and I go way back to Lincoln School, Evansville, Indiana. My goodness. Way back in the day. Thank you so much, Greg. My goodness.
All right, Greg.
Thank you. I just want to say one more thing, because this guy was back in the day. I know he said he don't play his guitar that much, but he was incredible as a guitar player. Paul, he was the best, one of the best I've ever seen, and I don't care who you could put against him when he was the top of the game. And we always tried to get him to sing back then, but he was reluctant.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm working on my guitar chops again, Greg. I'm working on them again. I'm gonna put it back in the act too.
All right. Hey, but I got your number. So I thought I was gonna get out there this spring, but my wife is going to Sacramento to see her mom. I don't think I can get away.
Okay.
So,
I look forward to that. Thank you so much.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right, I appreciate
take care
your call, Gregory.
You're welcome.
All right. That's a nice treat, huh?
We've been in touch every now and then on Facebook, but we haven't talked by phone in over 30 years. So that's wow.
Okay. All right. Well, let's hear another song from your debut solo album. Can you set this one up? This is the one entitled All the Things That I Love.
Oh, yeah. This song came about, I've got a lot of hobbies and other interests outside of music, but this song kind of focuses on about three or four of my main interests. You know, I love looking up at the sky and seeing clouds. I love clouds. I love looking at clouds. I love looking at cloud formations. That's one. Two, I love trains. I love trains. And I gigged in Japan for a few months, and I rediscovered just how much I love trains. They've got the bullet trains over there. And then the other thing I love is, did I say cheesecake?
Cheesecake.
I love
trains and
cheesecake.
Yeah.
And so
what
we
a combination!
Built
the, I
so,
can tell you, I love all three of those things myself.
That's all right. Preston, Larry, and I, we worked up a lyric about that, and we threw in other things like walking along the beach, and I love to camp and all that. So we put as much of that as we could into a 3.5 minute song that would make sense and sound good and touch people's hearts, because everyone's got some hobbies and recreation things that they love. Some of the stuff we take for granted, you know, like walking in the rain or with all the snow that's been out there, snowball fights and skiing and things like that. So
yeah,
that's what this song is about.
Okay, without further ado, then we will play All the Things That I Love from Cliff Payne's Welcome to My World debut CD. How
that I love.
We're back with Cliff Payne. Go ahead if you want to comment on it.
Yeah, just thank you for the compliment about that song, yeah, Preston. You know, the songs were written by my producer, Preston mm-hmm. Glass, and Larry Battiste. You know, Larry conducts the orchestra for the mm-hmm. Grammys. And kudos to them for doing such a great job. And all the musicians and the singers on the album, everyone did such a great job. And the engineer, it's a great work. Great work.
Yeah. It sounds like a tremendous album. I just bought it this morning myself, and I haven't had the chance to play it all. But I see that there's some great titles on there, and I mean, obviously, when you're listening to your talent, you can deliver.
Uh-huh.
So that's all I got to say. You can deliver.
Well, thank you.
All right. Well, I had open heart surgery as recently as January this year. So when someone says an operation or injury caused them to pause and reflect, I know exactly what they're talking about. And I bring that up because I want to ask you, can you tell us what happened to you in 2013?
Yes, I'll do that. First of all, I want to say I'm glad you sound energetic, and also I'm glad you're on your feet and doing what you do so well.
That's it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I said on your feet because, you know, you never know. Yeah, you know, we take walking for granted.
Yeah.
And the accident that I had, I was on stage. I was singing a song. I was singing a song, and I got the idea of just, you know, jumping off the stage into the audience. The stage mm-hmm. wasn't very high; it was only maybe a couple of feet high off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd done the jump many times before, so I jumped off. And at first, I mean, there was no pain or anything. It just felt like I slipped and fell.
Mm.
And when I fell, I looked at my legs, and I tried to get up, and I couldn't move my legs at all. couldn't move them at all. I looked at my my knee. I could see my knees. What had happened to my knees? Sticking up through my pants. You know, the knees had torn off. The knees had torn completely off. And there's still no pain. And the band was still pumping, still playing the music and all. And there's a dance floor, and two people came over to me. And they said they were doctors, and they checked my legs. They said, you know, Cliff, you just blew out both your knees. We'll call you an ambulance. And they said, we're going to move you, so it might hurt a little. And, oh, man. It was awful. So, you know, they called the ambulance, and it happened in San Francisco. And it took me to the hospital, and I was in the hospital for almost 3 weeks. I didn't really realize how serious the injury was until the day after my operation. The doctor and his assistant came in and said, you know, Cliff, Mr. Payne, we got to tell you, the last person that had the injury that you had, when they went home, when we sent him home, he died about 30 days later. I went,
Wow. Yeah.
And he said the reason he died is because he had some scar tissue that formed in his leg and got into the bloodstream, and it went to his lungs and went to his heart. And killed him. So we're gonna keep you here a little longer, and we're gonna over medicate you to make sure that doesn't happen to you. And I said, wow, thank you. I wanna be around. That was when I realized just how serious it was. And so after that, so I was in the hospital 3 weeks, and then I spent about 8-9 months in a wheelchair. Couldn't stand, couldn't walk, couldn't move my legs. I had nurses at the house, had a ramp put in. It was just awful. And during this whole time, I was still singing. I was still getting the gigs that I could do. And I didn't have too much trouble adjusting to singing in a wheelchair. It was just kind of awkward. Now, people, if there was a stage, people had to lift me up onto the stage and all. So I was in that wheelchair for about 8-9 months. Then I spent another 4 months in rehab, just trying to get my legs to do something and learning how to walk. So 2014 was the first year that I was completely on my feet again. It was everything was a chore. I mean, I couldn't dress myself. I couldn't, you know, even going to the bathroom was a chore.
Yeah.
It was just, now I'm back. I'm walking again. My legs are not 100%. They're probably about 95%, but I'm just happy to be walking.
All by the grace of God, that's for sure.
Amen to that. Amen.
Yeah,
double amen.
Yeah.
To that.
Yeah, just kind of, you know, I asked a stupid question, I guess. How difficult it must be performing from a wheelchair? I mean, you know, we all kind of, as you say, take walking for granted, but when we have to make adjustments to our act, how was that?
Yeah, it was, and that's a good question. It's a very good question to ask. You know, I in addition to the singing and concerts and things, I also teach voice. And the way that I got through singing in a wheelchair was just remembering the basics of how to sing correctly. And that helped me quite a bit, you know, singing from the diaphragm, not singing from your throat and all. That helped a lot. It helped a lot. I found I was able to do in a wheelchair, and there were times when I was in a wheelchair when my legs were out straight. It was a few months before I could, you know, bend them down. But I found I was able to do everything that I could do in a wheelchair, or standing up in a wheelchair. I didn't have any problems at all singing in a wheelchair.
Well, as they say, the show must go on.
the show must go on. That was a big concern when they put me in with Charleston. I'm watching. Can I do this? But it worked.
Okay, good. Well, now, speaking of the injury, I don't think most people understand what it means for a person to lose the ability to completely bathe themselves or get up
and go
use the bathroom. Will you describe the challenges that?
Yeah, it was any personal hygiene ability was just, it was a chore. You know, mm-hmm. I couldn't bathe myself. You know, I'm telling you, going to the restroom when you're in a wheelchair, especially when you're out in public, it's an unforgettable ordeal. I had to learn how to do certain things, you know. I had certain transportation services to take me to the gig since I couldn't drive.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to go to the restroom, when I had to go to the restroom, it was a major fanfare.
To
get to the restroom, have someone open the door, and then get me in there and try to figure out how to do what I needed.
Oh, boy.
At home, it was a lot easier. I mean, we had nurses at the house, mm-hmm. and then I had some people that gave me these porta potty things that keep near the bed and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably the most that and trying to get a shower was
mm-hmm.
I had to literally crawl crawl out of the wheelchair and just drag myself along the floor to get in the shower.
Yeah.
And from times I had some nurses would come over and give me a sponge bath, but when that stopped, I would find a way to crawl out of the chair and scoot along the floor and scoot into the shower.
Well, I imagine the emphasis is always on you gotta do what you gotta do, and hopefully you can do better tomorrow.
That's right. Yeah, you find ways when adversity hits. I mean, you find ways to get through it. You got to find a way to get through it. You know.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna play No Pain No Gain. This is the one with your friend Freda Payne.
She
had the hit song Band of Gold. Are you related to her?
Yeah.
Oh, are you?
You know, we're trying to find that out, but we kept asking.
Oh, okay.
You know, because we don't know, and I'm trying to find out if there's some kind of distant relationship. We definitely got along like we were a family, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm putting the feelers out there just to see if we are somehow related.
Okay. Well, I'd like for you to set up the song for us, so go right ahead, Cliff.
Yeah, we wanted to come up with some kind of a clever play on the name and the word pain.
Mm-hmm.
All my life, I've had people, you know, take my last name, you know, do the pain. Oh yeah, I've had any painful experiences and all. And so we decided to take a well-known moniker, well-known phrase, no pain, no gain, and turn it around into like a song of encouragement. Yeah, it could be a love song too, but it's a song of encouragement, and that's the fuel behind this song. It was a total joy singing with Freda. We knocked the song out very, very quickly.
Okay. All right. Well, here is No Pain, No Gain, featuring Freda Payne, along with Cliff Payne.
Goodbye.
Cliff, I mean, you guys.
Oh yes.
Wow. I tell you, that's a good one. That's a good one.
We had a lot of fun with that one. We had a lot of fun.
Oh, I can imagine. All right, just hold on a minute. We're going to return with the final segment with our guest, Cliff Payne. I got to do a little bit more business here, Cliff.
All right.
All right. Our show is also brought to you by BOPSA, which stands for Black Owned Beauty Supply Association. Their mission, connecting the black dots, consisting of 8 major connections. Number 1, consumers. 2, social media. 3, hair care product manufacturers and hair distributors. 4, barbershops. 5, salons, natural hair salons and braiding salons. 6, beauty supply stores. 7, traditional retail and online shopping. And finally, 8, the black community. That is the 8 major connections when connecting the dots. Check out the details of BOPSA founder Sam Enan's latest concept, the Black Box Barber Caddies for Men. And entrepreneurs can get the full details on how to become an investor, distributor, salesperson, or wholesaler of the Black Box Caddy trio of machines. Specifically, the Black Box Barber Caddy with men's hair care products. There's the Black Box Beauty Supply with women hair care products. And the Black Box Natural Products, which addresses the natural black hairstyles that are becoming more popular today. The Black Box Trio are vending machines that will expand your income potential and serve your customer base. Think inside the base. Think inside the box. Go to BOPSA.org, that's www.bobsa.org, for complete details. Or simply call Sam Enan at 650-863-3491. Tell him Hamp sent you. All right, we are back with our guest, Cliff Payne. We just debuted 3 cuts from his Welcome to My World CD. So what do you think? What do you think? What did you think when you finally got through with the albums?
Well, it was a source of what I call joyful relief. The whole process, the whole process was so much fun. We had such wonderful people involved, and still have wonderful people involved in the entire project. You know, I've done so many albums by so many different folks over the last few decades, and I've always wanted to do my own solo album, and so I felt a real sense of joy and accomplishment, and just real sense of joy, career-wise, that is in sort of like a class by itself. It's a wonderful feeling to complete something that's been a dream of mine pretty much all my life, and to have it happen the way that it has happened, and now the album is out in the world now, and I'm getting we're getting a great response. It's just like the icing on the cake.
Yeah, quite an accomplishment, a personal accomplishment. It's like you just kind of. I would imagine, for me, having written books, and I know my first book was kind of said, wow, did you do that?
I just heard one of the songs from the album on the radio, streaming from England. The album is getting a lot of play in England. And other parts of the UK, and we're planning to shoot a video, a music video, with one of the songs. I think we're going to do that on Pieces More Than the Absence of War. We're shooting a video on that in the next few days.
Okay, all right. Well, keep me abreast, and I hope you don't mind if I play some of the songs on the album.
I don't mind at all. Play the songs as much as you want. I'm just so happy that you've asked me to be a part of your show. Sure, knock it out.
Oh, hey. No, I'm just glad that we have such a distinguished guest on our show.
Well, thank you. Likewise.
That has such a full resume. So yeah, I like it. Well, tell us about your plans for 2016. What are you planning on doing for the rest of the year, this year?
Well, obviously at the top of the list is promoting the album, and I want to do some concerts emanating from the success of the album, and I'm speaking with several people now about the possibility of doing some concerts, not only here in the San Francisco Bay Area, but also in the Midwest, different parts of the country. And I know that we're going to have our official CD release event over the next few weeks. We'll probably we'll have it in the San Francisco Bay Area. We'll most likely have it in the LA area also. And so for this year, I want to focus on promoting the album and creating my concert show to support the album as the year goes on. And I'll certainly be letting the public know, letting you know what concerts will be coming up, because they're in the works. They're in the works.
Okay. All right. Very good. And one other thing, you have a bio video for those who may be interested in your comeback from the injury and your life in general. How do we access that?
There are two places you can see that. One is on my website. It's under the tab that says About Cliff, and then Interview and Media on my website. That's cliffpayne.org. And that's C-L-I-F, as in flag, one F, P-A-Y-N-E.org. And you can also see it on an Indiegogo campaign that I have. If you just type in online, type in Indiegogo, IndieGogo.com, and put Cliff Payne, you can see a variety of videos on that page as well.
Okay, all right. And certainly, if we pay attention to your website, cliffpayne.org, we'll be able to see upcoming events as well, right?
Yes, indeed, yes, yes. I'll start posting those in the next, I'd say the next month, once as things are starting to come in.
Okay, all right, all right. Can you give us your contact information and any other websites where we can find out about Cliff Payne or get in touch with him?
You can contact me by mail directly at Cliff Payne, P.O. Box 70743, Sunnyvale, California. The zip is 94086. And, of course, my website, cliffpayne.org. I am on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook fan page is Cliff Payne Official Music. And there's information on there that will direct you to my website and Twitter and even LinkedIn, I believe, on there.
Okay.
Any other email information, all that stuff is on my website.
Oh, you want to give us the email?
You could. My email address is sangpayne@gmail.com. That's S as in Sam, A A N G P A Y N E @gmail.com. The email is based on what folks used to say to me when I sang in church in high school. They go, "Sang thing, sang."
Oh, that's good.
So that's where that email address comes from.
Okay, all right, Cliff. I tell you, I am so grateful that you were here and to hear your complete story of, you know, where you came from, who you work with, and especially about the injury and how you bounced back from that. It's just I think it's a testament of survival for you.
Well, I thank you very much for having me on your show. It's been an absolute pleasure and a joy to speak with you and talk about the industry and speak with you. And it's great to talk to Greg again. My goodness, thank you so much.
That's something. Yeah, I'm going to ask you back around Christmas time just to see if you can stop by and, you know, doing your busy schedule and talk with us a while, you know, to see how things are going. Is that okay?
Well, thank you very much. That's wonderful. I'd love to come back and do that. Thank you for asking.
All right. Okay. All right, Cliff Payne, ladies and gentlemen, check out his newly released CD, Welcome to My World. You take it easy, Cliff.
You too. Thank you, Curtis. Take care now.
All right, then. All right, let me add an announcement from me to this show. I'm also an author, as you probably heard, having just released a publication about my late father. I keep bringing this up because Author House, the publisher of a book I wrote about my grandmother, presented my novel at last year's Miami Book Fair International. That occurred on November 20th through the 22nd at Miami's Dade College. It actually sparked new interest in one of my books. The book entitled Gracie Hall Hampton, The Arkansas Years, 1917 to 1953, is one of the works I am most proud of, although I think Remembering Mars, the book about my father, is just as compelling. The point is, I do understand that marketing my new book should also include the promotion of Gracie Hall Hampton. Anyone interested in black family relationships and our heritage should add these books and other similar books by other authors to your personal library. This year, Hamp's Corner of America is going to continually promote the need for people to read as a way of increasing your personal knowledge base. Reading keeps you aware of what is happening in our political circles and strengthens your community. Get those books like mine and other authors who are providing sense of worth and historical matter that people of color will not find in their school's curriculum or the public library. Read those internet blogs, the magazine articles, and newspaper articles that truly interest you. Share them with your family and show them that reading increases your awareness of what is really going on. Don't wait for someone to tell you what is happening because you will get their interpretation of events. Might not be what's really going on. Find out for yourself. Encourage your children to be independent thinkers and not just following the crowd. Reading is where you start to separate yourself, develop thought, learn any and all types of new ideas. Teach your children to use their imagination, improving their creativity that can lead them to all types of professions in life. Yes, reading is the key to a wealth of knowledge. You can look for our public announcements on the need to teach our children to read at young ages so that they develop great reading habits. My son Richie has produced a commercial for me via his AO Media that you should enjoy. Once again, you can find the details on my website at http, hcofa.net. Meanwhile, thank you for allowing me to promote works that I am so very proud of having created. You just don't know how putting those types of works out there make me feel at this time in my life. It is indeed a feeling of accomplishment. And ladies and gentlemen, here's our last song of the show today. It comes from another one of my favorites, pianist, keyboardist Brian Culberson, with his guest Wayman Tisdale on bass guitar. The song is entitled, It's Only You. Remember what I said, it's only you. All right. Hit it, fellas. Yes. Like that. Feel like I should be driving somewhere. Maybe Vegas, Reno, somewhere. Yates. Yeah, and this pianist, keyboardist Brian Culberson, with this guest, the late, great Wayman Tisdale on bass guitar. I like that song. I like that song. Well, I'm going to tell you, folks, it's time for me to get on out of here. We've had a good time talking to Cliff Payne and listening to his music. I'm looking forward to listening to the rest of that album because the guy can sing, as we say. As always, we meet here at the corner on a bi-monthly basis. I am your host, Curtis Hampton II. Just so you and the audience know, we do have chat room capabilities here. You can even chat among yourselves while you wait to ask our guests or myself a question. Since we always sprinkle our show with 5 to 6 musical cuts from our favorite artists, let us know your favorites and I will try to get them in. If there are any comments, you can post them right on the show's comment section. Our next show will be Hamp's selection from his collection of Soul Jazz Music, Volume 12. The broadcast will be February 27th, 11 o'clock. It's on a Saturday, y'all. Details and other specifics will be available on our website, including LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as other social media. Can't join us while we're live, you can always tune into our website and listen to the show at your leisure. For now, just saying peace and thank God this afternoon for making it such a wonderful day and a more promising tomorrow. Good evening and take it easy. I'm out.